So we're in Revelation 11 on our verse 19, closing this out further. We have had our nice discussions and study and various readings on the Ark of the Testament or Ark of the Covenant. So verse 19, excuse me, just itself, I'll read it. And the temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the Ark of the Covenant or Testament, and there were lightnings and voices, thunderings, earthquake, and great hail. So we wanted to continue on a short list of scriptures in Revelation that talk about either the temple or the Ark of the Covenant so that we can consider those. Last week, we looked at Revelation 3:12, that was one of the promises to the church, the faithful of the 144,000, that they would be a pillar in the temple of God. So there was a, that was that promise. We looked at that verse. And so the next one we had in line was Revelation 13:6. And, let's see, just looking across my screen, Sister Alice, could you read that one for us? Revelation 13:6, please.
Did we do Revelation 14:15 and 17?
Okay, I'll read my list so everyone can understand how I'm planning. We looked at Revelation 3:12 last week. We're now going to look at Revelation 13:6. Then we're going to look at Revelation 14:15 and 17. Then we're going to look at Revelation 15:5-8. Then we're going to look at Revelation 16:1-17. And we're going to look at Revelation 21:3. Now, you don't need to write those down, but I just want you to hear it so that you don't think I'm missing one. And as we go along, if I do end up missing one, then bring it up. Okay. Sister Alice?
Okay. Which one did you say? 13:6?
Yep, please.
Okay. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwelt in heaven.
So even though we didn't read the context here, Sister Alice, this is in this 42 months or 1260 year period of the Dark Ages. What would you understand about this verse to start our discussion?
That it's papacy that opened its mouth to blaspheme God, against God, and his name and his tabernacle. And the tabernacle, the true church, would be the true church where God dwells. And those that dwell in heaven, the spiritual condition. And papacy is blaspheming them by their false claims that they're the true church.
Okay, very good. A thought on why it says the tabernacle? Perhaps instead of temple here?
That would be where the church is dwelling, in the tabernacle.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. Further comments on this verse? Sister Debbie.
I'm wondering, when you say temple, it's like that's where you go to worship God. But when you say tabernacle, it has more of a homey sound to it. It's more like a home, like what Sister Alice brought out, where the saints live with God. Whereas, I don't know if that makes sense. Over.
Okay. Thank you. Ruth.
I had a couple comments from volume 2.
Okay.
One is on the tabernacle from page 306 that they blaspheme the church, the true church, by replacing their own system of saints and clergy.
Okay.
And also that them that dwell in heaven, by proclaiming sainthood for the false saints and putting the true saints to death. from page 307. But also I was thinking of the tabernacle possibly because they're thinking of the saints in the flesh that they're blaspheming, and they're, it's a temporary, tabernacle was temporary compared to the temple being permanent. Over.
Okay, very good. Very good. And yes, a place represents a condition. The tabernacle as a place represents the condition of the church still being developed in the flesh. We're still in our wilderness wandering, and the papacy, blasphemes and blasphemes God, the Father, who has his spirit begotten, who are our blaspheming, who are tabernacle condition in their journey, still in the flesh, and those that have been deceased, and they would be considered saints. They aren't living, they're sleeping, but nonetheless, they are the saintly ones, and papacy has taken advantage of all of that that was holy and turned it to either persecute it or to imitate it. But further comments. Burden.
I was thinking, Brother Rick, in verse 6, it says, and he opened his mouth to blaspheme against God and to blaspheme against his name. So when we think of the name of God, we might think of, you know, what does make our name or our character? It's, you know, who God is, and that's told by his plan. So they've blasphemed his plan. We have God dishonoring doctrines, instead of, God's loving plan. We have these, false doctrines that say that God created man with an immortal soul. He can't die. And so, he has to go somewhere. The good ones go to heaven, the bad ones go to hell, and so on. So all of these, false doctrines, have, changed God's name to make him worse than, you know, than, the demons. When we think of, you know, the fear that has come upon man that if they don't live a certain way, they're going to have an eternity of torment to face is really terribly torn down the good name of God. Over.
All right, thank you. So we see here, brethren, in this verse, we're focusing on the tabernacle because we're considering tabernacle and temple and the Ark of the Covenant from our verse. So, was there any more comments on the tabernacle in this verse? Because we could discuss all the symbols a lot. All right, let's go to our next one. Sister Debbie, could you read for us in Revelation 14, verses, I turned one page too far. It is 15 and 16 that have our expressions, but I'm just going to ask you to back up to 14 and read 14 through, let's say 17, please.
And I saw, and lo, a white cloud, and upon the cloud one sitting like to a son of man, having upon his head a golden crown, and in his hand a sharp sickle. And another messenger did come forth out of the sanctuary, crying in a great voice to him who was sitting upon the cloud, send forth thy sickle and reap, because come to thee hath the hour of reaping, because ripe hath been the harvest of the earth. And he who was sitting upon the cloud did put forth his sickle upon the earth, and the earth was reaped. And another messenger did come forth out of the sanctuary, that is, in the heaven, having he also a sharp sickle.
Okay. So I know we're just picking this right out of context, but do you have any opening comments, Sister Day?
That it mentions the sanctuary again, and I don't know how to relate it. Sorry.
No, that's all good. Very good. Opening comments on these verses. So I think we're very familiar with our verse 14. We refer to it quite often as representing our Lord Jesus returning in 1874 as the chief reaper. He returns with the golden crown, demonstrating he returns as a king, having received his kingdom, and that he has a sharp sickle, which represents the harvest message, the truths of the harvest message, which was supposed to do a separating work, cutting down the wheat and the tares, as we know from the parables in Matthew 13, the wheat would be the faithful 144,000, and the tares are imitation Christians, those who are not spirit-begotten but claim to be Christian. And so it's demonstrating this is the leading work he has to do as being the returned king. He gathers his servants. And the way he gathers his servants is by using the sickle of truth to separate the wheat out from the tares and the tare systems, the nominal churches, if you will. So with that setting in verse 15, we have a messenger. Now it says another messenger is because earlier in this chapter there's angels or messengers mentioned. But just for the continuity of our study focusing on this temple or tabernacle aspect, we're going to focus in on that. Ruth?
I just have a comment from the second volume, page 239, that the angel's coming out of the cleansed sanctuary class. So it would be along the lines of the church.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that. Sister Debbie?
What was that reference again? I missed it.
The second volume, page 239. Okay, was there another hand did I miss? So the aspect of we have in verse 15 that a messenger comes out of the temple, cries with a loud voice to him that sat on the cloud. So here is instructions, as it were, being given to Jesus, because we just saw he's our returned king who is going to begin the reaping work. And the message is, thrust in your sickle and reap, for the time is come for thee to reap. So the reaping would take place during the time of harvest. You have to wait for your crops to develop. And in that time of harvest, it goes on to say, for the harvest of the earth is dried. Now, the King James says ripe, but if you look in the margin, it's dried. Now, there's a reason for saying it's dried. It's true, it's ripe, but it's dried because a little later, there's a vine of the earth that it's reaped too, but blood comes out. See, that's a wet reaping versus a dry reaping. The wheat are just showing dry. There's just a little distinction there. However, the point is that there's a certain time in God's plan where the harvest would take place. And we all liken, as Jesus said in that parable, the wheat and the tares, the harvest is the end of the age. So we know that's the end of the gospel age, because the gospel age was for the growing or the development of the wheat. Of course, the tares were sowed by the enemy. So the nominal church grew exponentially. So when it's the time of harvest, you have to be at the end of the age, and then you have to have your chief reaper on the scene to direct the under reapers, which we all become if we're faithful. And we use the same message of truth. We don't determine who's deserving. We just use the message of truth. The truth does the sorting. the separating, and God determines who will be of which class. However, this demonstrates there's something more powerful. So an angel or messenger, here's my question. The angel or messenger, does it always have to be a living person or being? Or can it represent something else? Okay, Ruth and then Brother Chris.
Well, it's a messenger, but it could also just be the instruction or the message, so that at that time they started to understand time prophecy and they started to understand the chronology and they started to understand the work of the hour at this point in time. And so I think that in this instance that the angel is the time prophecy, indicating that the time of harvest has come over.
All right, very good. Thank you. Well, don't go away, Brother Chris. If you have your further comment, please.
Well, Ruth nailed it pretty good, what I was going to bring out. But that verse 14, and I looked, and behold, a white cloud. So this is from God's perspective. The cloud's all white. Jesus is sitting on the cloud. He's not in the cloud. He's not under the cloud, because from earth, you know, trouble is beginning with this illumination, his return, as all brought out, and that another angel came out of the temple. So we've already discussed and shown that these messengers can be the message itself, the plagues poured out by messengers. The volumes are messengers. And so we've seen that go on. And so time prophecy itself, as Sister Ruth said, would be this other angel, that it's the Lord's, on the Lord's timetable, 1878 is now the time. And then you touched on the earth is dried, and why that's important, because other scriptures tell us about the green barley and green wheat referring to like the great company who aren't ready. But those that are dried show mature Christians that are now ready to be part of this final message. So they're fully developed, mature Christians, not great company. So it doesn't apply to the spirit begotten in general, but the little flock particularly, I think, over.
Okay, very good. And so true. Very good. Thank you. Further comments on this so far? So what we, go ahead, Ruth.
Well, I think we have the same picture in Ezekiel 9, where the man with the writer's inkhorn, it's the message. It's not a person. It's the message that goes out and marks and has been working throughout the whole harvest. And it looks like it's a messenger personally, but it's actually the truth over.
So true. Very good. Good example. Thank you. Sister Brenda.
I know this is a very physical example, but when I grow peas and beans to save them for the next season's planting, I have to dry them completely, because if I store them with moisture, they would rot. And then they'd be spoiled and you can't use them again. So I think that's a very deal. So I think the drying is preserving, and it's kind of like sealing, almost, so to speak, over.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. All right. Very nice. Sister Carrie.
I have in the strong number, you said that the angel could mean not necessarily a being of like a person, or I have in the strong, that sometimes it's a person or like an angel, excuse me, a demon is number three. Number one is messenger. Four is a person carrying forth a message. Number five is like a thing or event carrying forth a message from God. This is an implication. That is a hardship, pestilence, wind, etc., or an animal, donkey, locust, etc. In the Greek, Hebrew is, the Greek is angelos.
Okay, very good. And that's true. It can mean a living being. It could be an angel, a spirit being, could be a human being, and it might be an inanimate message. I mean, it's not unusual to use in literary senses that I received a message from God. And we're not talking about someone coming and talking to us. We're talking about some event that happened that we felt was sent by God to give us some sense of instruction. So sometimes it's stated, I received a message from God, but it wasn't a verbal message. It could be. That's another way. Okay, Brother Chris.
I didn't know if you were going to highlight this later, but that verse 15, for the time is come, the diaglot has come. So that ties in with the other Revelation verses that refer to the hour, a very short period, even though this is a long hour, as opposed to a real short hour. But it is that hour of temptation throughout the harvest period. Over.
No, I wasn't going to highlight that. I thank you. Very good. All right. So, in our verse 15, just with that, I think what we're seeing is that, who would be in a position to give a message to Jesus? Well, it would be God, but it's God's plan. And it's in God's plan that the time had come for this harvest to begin and for Jesus to begin the work. So there's a thought of that. So then we just come back to the thought of the temple. So this might not be very satisfying for some of you, but in my mind, in the Revelation, I view the temple as more than just one strict application. I see aspects of it as representing the completed church, but I also see aspects of it as representing divine authority, God in his divine authority. And here, I think it fits better that this is God and his divine authority that sends forth a message to instruct Jesus as the chief reaper to begin his work. Whereas I think the tabernacle in Revelation is always referencing the church in a temporary condition. So the temple can represent the church complete. It can represent God's divine authority. The tabernacle, I think, would always represent the church in a temporary condition. So let's see if it continues to play out. But I had to introduce it here because I don't think it's the temple in our verse 15. I don't think it's the church giving instruction to Jesus that now the time to reap. It just doesn't seem like the proper protocol to me. But if someone thinks of it that way, that's fine. Just my opinion. Brother Chris, is your hand still up for the comment?
It's still up, but not for a comment. Sorry.
Okay. Let's develop the other verse here, and this, you know, we'll continue the discussion. Verse 16, and he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. So it shows that Jesus received the message, the instructions. He began his harvesting work, beginning with gathering the wheat, and then eventually the earth will, all the wheat will be gathered. All the 144,000 will be gathered. I want to make an observation here. It's not directly on our subject, but I can't help it in passing. You remember in Jesus' parable of the wheat and tares in Matthew 13, you remember that Jesus said, gather first the tares and bind them in bundles to be burned. We understand that the first was, the word first meant that first you would bundle the tares before you set them on fire. it wasn't that first you gathered all the tares and then you're going to go back for the wheat. That's not how you would do it. Because what happens is when you put in a sickle in a field of wheat and tares growing together, you're cutting them both down together. You sort them. But then you would first bundle your tares in bundles before you burn them. That's the thought. So in our prophetic picture, we think what that's teaching is that the dry harvest, the wheat harvest, is all gathered and separated from the nominal churches. They're all gathered to the Lord, faithful. Then the bundled tares would be burned. And in our setting here in the 14th chapter, after the earth has been reaped of the dry harvest, we have an additional harvest to take place. So, okay, let's read back in our verse 16. And he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. That's the dry harvest. That's the wheat class. Verse 17, another angel, another message or messenger comes out of the temple, which is in heaven. He also having a sharp sickle. And another angel or messenger came out from the altar, which had power over fire, and cried with a loud voice to him that sat, that had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in thy sharp sickle and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And then it goes on. So here we have in 17, we're confronted with the same thought. Is this angel messenger a being, or is it a message of some sort? Brother Chris.
Well, I think they're laying out the plan, as we're saying. This plan is God's plan being revealed or working out. That great wheel is turning. And, the Lord returns. The first thing he does is he deals with his servants, the little flock, the church. And then that's complete. It's reaped. And then another angel, now it's time to go to phase two of that plan. And now, it's going to, which is in heaven. This is not reaping the earth, it's reaping heaven, so it's still spiritual. I think it's dealing with the last of the spirit begotten, the great company. And then that's done. And then, now this wheel continues. It's not, now I've got to deal with the nominal systems that have been abusing my name. So it's all those that professed God, Christ's name. And it's just 1, 2, 3, right on down the line, preparing it for the, this is all part of the messianic age. So the Lord taking care of business of everyone who's using his name over.
Oh, very nicely laid out, Brother Chris. Very good. That makes sense to me. You know, it could be highly interpretive, but, I think it's again this sense of God's plan continuing to move forward, ratchet forward. And we use more plain verses that we're familiar with so that we know already the divine plan of the ages, what has to take place in order. And so here, with these three messages of doing this reaping and separating work, we, as Brother Chris just did, we can outline it. First, a little flock are gathered, then the great company is dealt with, and then we have the tare class dealt with, the vine of the earth, representing the nominal churches. Brother Chris.
Oh, I was just going to add that we've got out of the temple, divine authority is God's timetable. And then out of the temple, part two. And then it's out of the altar. Well, the spirit begotten class is reaped and they're in place. And now they are the ones that are putting forth the commission. It seems like the Lord hands it over. Now the government is in place and working. Just a thought. Over.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Further comments? Brother Dan and then Sister Roseanne.
Brother Rick, I'm looking at the divine plan chart, the chart of the ages, and along with our discussion, we see, as the Lord outlined it in the parable of the wheat and the tares in Matthew 13, we have the church growing together in its mixed form, all during the gospel age, represented by small letters N, M, P, and Q, the church class, the great company class, and the believers, and then tares. And then we move to the harvest. Our Lord returns, and we see the separation work that we're discussing. First, the little flock is separated to the Lord, and then the great company is dealt with. They go through the trouble, but it's in the shaded area. And then we have the nominal church falling apart, the bundling, and then the burning of the tare class, so S, T, U, and V on the chart. And so it tells the same story, in a familiar way that we understand using the divine, the chart of the ages that tells the plan of God and helps the mind through the eye to see and understand the lessons. Over.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Sister Roseanne.
I hate to put us, to go. I'm confused. I'm confused. Okay. The 14 through 17, 14 starts and the elect is being gathered at this point. And then you talked about, and it has to be dried. And then we talked about the Matthew parable of the wheat and tares and how, and I wasn't sure what you said. When you gather, you have to gather both together, the wheat and the tares, and then the tares get sorted out. I kind of got lost at that point.
So Sister Roseanne, let's go piece by piece. If you were given a sickle, which I know you know how to use one, and they sent you out to the field of wheat and tares, how would you go about deep harvesting it? What would you do?
You would just thrust it, and you'd get both, unless you individually pull each.
Well, you're using a sickle. Remember, you got to thrust in the sickle.
Right. So you would just thrust it, and then you would reap both.
Okay, so you've reaped them both. They're both cut down, and then the Lord said to do what with the tares?
Bundle them. So you're separating them at that time. Okay.
And you bundle them before you do what?
You're bundling them before you burn them.
That's right.
So the wheat gets gathered into the barn at this point, right?
Huh?
And, okay, and then you bundle the tares. Now, how does that relate to the scriptures that we're following in Revelation?
So let me ask you this. Sorry, I keep interrupting you, but.
No, that's okay. Please.
When, in the parable, how are the bundled tares burned? What does it tell us about that? When do they get burned in the parable? Remember that?
No, I'm sorry.
They're cast into the fire?
Yes, sir.
You mean a gnashing of teeth?
Yep.
Okay. So what time is that? Prophetically, what time is that?
That's at the end.
Correct. Exactly. Well, that's the Armageddon crash.
Right.
That's the greatest time of trouble that ever was since a nation. That's our fire of anarchy. That's the fire of anarchy in the parable. That's when the bundled tares are burned after all the wheat had been gathered. So we're looking at that same sequence here in Revelation 14. Little flock, wheat gathered first. Mm-hmm. Then, by the way, the great company gets separated because they're not tares, but they aren't ripe wheat either.
And but that's not being referenced here, right?
Just in passing.
Okay.
And then, we have a message in 18 of a message to thrust in the sickle, who had this thrust in the sickle and gather the vine of the earth.
Okay.
And that's the nominal churches or the bundled tares.
Okay. Okay.
But
I'm understanding.
So we're just, you know, what's being suggested is that these angels or messengers are messages demonstrating the progress in the plan of God of the events that would take place since our Lord returned upon the white cloud. In verse 14, it shows the progress of what takes place during the end of this gospel age. So Brother Chris is outlining it, then Brother Dan was outlining it using the chart. Mm-hmm. And even though there's the brethren debate the angel messages, what it might represent, the brethren are pretty clear on the progress or the progression of what's being symbolized here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but did you have any other comment you wanted to make, Sister Roseanne?
Well, I just want to go back to the great company. So, I mean, there it's implied in verse 16 that the great company would follow the harvest of the wheat, right?
It's implied in verse 17 in a sense. Another message comes out.
Oh, in 17.
Of the temple, which is in heaven, also having a sharp sickle. And it's suggested that that's where the great company would also be separated. But because the great company is not a called class, they're a mercy class. They're dealt with. And we learn that in Revelation 7, sorry. We learn that in Revelation 7, that after the 144,000 are complete, then there's a great multitude, which no man could number, because there wasn't a called class. And they are dealt with through the tribulation.
Mm-hmm. Now I got it.
Oh, after good.
That final little piece. Thank you. I got it.
Well, we're remembering that the main point is exposing ourselves to what's here. And as we continue in our study, when we get to this 14th chapter and we go verse by verse from the beginning, a lot more of this hopefully falls into place for all of us. But we have to start, you know, with exposing ourselves on where these expressions, temple and tabernacle, are in the Revelation so that we can not draw a hasty conclusion too early. That's all. Okay. So nothing to feel bad about not being 100% clear on it. It's symbolically understood. All right. Anyone else on this so far? Sister Betty.
I do appreciate that explanation, Brother Rick, because it was confusing for me also. It's the first time I've ever actually read in Revelation through, but to get these different thoughts, one thought and another thought, when she asked for explanation, I do appreciate your slowing down a little bit for me. I'm very slow at this. That's what I wanted to let you know. I appreciated that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Sister Betty. Very good. And that's, I do keep moving along, because if I don't see anybody raising their hand to give me a reaction, I just keep plowing along. So I don't mind. As long as we're on topic, that's the goal. Then just looking at this verse 18, another angel came out from the altar, which had power over fire, in other words, had authority over destruction, fire's destruction, and cried with a loud voice that him that had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in the sharp sickle and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. The angel thrust in his sickle into the earth, gathered the vine of the earth, cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of God, and it continues. So we feel this aspect. Another angel came out from the altar. Brother Chris was highlighting that it didn't come out, this message didn't come out of the temple like the previous two, but rather it came from the altar. Brother Chris was suggesting that that altar represented that the church was all in glory and that they were the ones that are given this message of authority to now use your power of destruction and put forth the messages to destroy the nominal churches. Some brethren, I have to say it in passing, some brethren feel that this altar is the Great Pyramid, based on Isaiah 19, that there's an altar and witness in the land of Egypt unto God. Some feel that, and their angle is that the pyramid also outlines the plan of God, like the chart of the ages, in a sense. And while we concur with that, the pyramid represents the plan of the ages, I'm not so sure that we find that the pyramid gives this message per se. You could possibly allude to it in the sense that in the pyramid, we have our chronological time periods represented. And so if this is just another aspect of saying, if you follow the chronology in the Great Pyramid as outlined in its measurements, it does bring you to a place where you might be able to identify the time for destroying the nominal church. That's a possibility. So I just had to say that. Sister Debbie?
Just that, if, you know, in real life, if this is the time of trouble going on, I don't think people are really going to be paying attention to some statues or, you know, monuments in Egypt at the time. They're probably going to be too worried about themselves and what's going on all around them to be, you know, but later, you know, like in the millennium, I can see the temple or the pyramid being another proof to mankind that the Lord was in charge the whole time over.
Okay, thank you. We weren't saying that people would interpret the pyramid that way. What we're saying is that the pyramid possibly would demonstrate that to give the message of authority that now's the time for the destruction of the terror systems. Not that the pyramid itself actually does that literally. Okay. Ruth.
Well, it makes more sense to me that it's referring back to the altar in Revelation 8, where we had the brazen altar pictured and the high priest offering, and that it's a picture that the church is complete in the high priest and had power over fire, and then they're going to be responsible for burning the tares, or in this case, the harvest of the earth, because we have the whole section in Revelation 8 that we went over with the altar 3-6, and it was the brazen altar. So anyway, that's another thought.
Well, that's adding to the original thought as Brother Chris was expressing it, and which I favor. And you thank you for bringing those verses back into mind for us. But I felt like I wanted to mention that other about the pyramid in case anyone hears that or reads it. Okay, good. So just here again, I'm just going to, the reason I had us look at these verses is because the temple was used several times and with a message or messenger. And we wanted to just, to my mind, it demonstrates that we can interpret the temple as not referring to the completed church, but rather to divine authority, giving forth the instruction on the next course of action in God's unfolding plan. And then as the altar is being brought out, not the temple, again, it would represent the completed sacrifice of the Christ. And that then they have this, they're given the authority to oversee the destruction of the nominal systems. So that's all good. But further comment here on these verses, Brother Chris.
Just for what it's worth, I think Sister Ruth brought it out well. The altar, you know, the first thing that you usually think of is a place of sacrifice, as the church head and body fully represent. But we also have the golden altar, and that's where the prayers of saints, we're told, go up and cross over to the most holy. And so it could represent, there could be a connection to the prayers of saints fulfilled. How long, O Lord? And now is the time that the Lord is going to answer that question. Now we're going to deal with all those that persecuted you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Over.
Okay. Oh, very good. Very good. All right. Further comments here. I think we touched on it for the specific parts we wanted to see today. Of course, Lord willing, we'll get to Revelation 14, go through the details. But if not, then we'll go to our next set of scriptures we wanted to consider. And Brother David Vickery, could you read for us in Revelation 14? Sorry, we just did that. Revelation 15, verses 5 through 8, please.
Thank you. Revelation 15, 5 through 8. I'm going to read from the Diaglot. And after these things I saw in the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was open. And those seven angels having the seven plagues came out of the temple, clothed with pure bright linen, and encircled about the breast with golden girdles. And one of the four living ones gave to the seven angels seven golden bowls full of wrath of that God who lives for the ages of the ages. And the temple was full of the smoke from the glory of God and from his power, and no one was able to enter the temple till the seven plagues of the seven angels were completed. In my mind, Brother Rick, this is talking again about the progression, but the completion of the little flock, the royal priesthood, and the great company, and that is the completion of that part of God's plan. And as Brother Chris pointed out with the golden altar, now the wrath of God is going to be poured out upon the earth in the form of plagues, which would be the hard truths and the I'll just leave it at that. But it reminds me also of I think it's 1 Kings 8 and Solomon's temple, where they had the when the temple was complete, the smoke filled the temple and no one else could come in. So it was that part appears to me to symbolize that it's totally complete. That door is shut in the next phase of issuing in the leveling of all society so that the new covenant can begin. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Good overview. Thank you. Further comments on these verses? Sister Debbie.
I just had a question on verse 5. In the Youngs, it says, opened was the sanctuary of the tabernacle of the testimony. Could you explain the sanctuary of the tabernacle of the testimony? Is that the tabernacle of the testimony? Is that the ark? Or could you explain, please? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So we remember that our verse that gets us here, that we've been talking, you know, we've been considering, is Revelation 11:19, the expression, the temple of God was open in heaven, and there was seen in the temple the ark of the testament or covenant. So I think the relationship is similar. And the relationship, I would suggest, is when you and I looked at all those verses in the Old Testament regarding the testimony of God, we found that the testimony specifically was the table of the law of God, the law of God, on which he based his covenant with Israel. So his God's law demonstrates both his requirements to be in a covenant relationship with him and the benefits or the chastenings for those who are in a covenant relationship with him. And we remember his chastenings for those in a covenant with him are for their betterment. But nonetheless, the thought was, is that the real testament of God is his law. It was on two, depicted on two tables of stone, representative of the larger law. That was an ark. And that ark, had the lid on top, and that was set in the most holy. And the most holy is the part of the tabernacle, the two rooms, the holy and the most holy. And that sometimes we saw in verses in the Old Testament that the tabernacle was referred to as the tabernacle of testimony. So there is a sense that we see in these expressions a continuity, that it's representing that God is in a covenant relationship with others. With natural Israel, it was all with a literal tabernacle, literal table of stones, literal ark, and he was in. He met with Israel at that tabernacle because they were in a covenant relationship with him. So this is representing, in these verses, I think it's being said, just said in different ways. This is representing that in the divine power of God, the temple, the tabernacle of the testimony or covenant in heaven was opened. So it's demonstrating that the Christ is complete. It will then be the time for God to put into motion the next step of his plan. And that is to pour out the seven last plagues, to completely eradicate the earth of the old heavens and old earth, the old nominal church systems, all the false religions, all the false science, so-called, clean the earth with a fire, and then, as it were, then the temple will be open for the service of the priests, the Christ, the Melchizedek priesthood, to inaugurate the new covenant blessings for natural Israel first, and by extension, the world of mankind. So in reading these different phrases, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was opened, that's showing in a very symbolic way, the church, the Christ is now complete. God wants to begin having the new covenant available to mankind, but first he has to get rid of the old order completely with the fire of anarchy. And to get that fire started, he is going to have the seven last plagues of his wrath poured out on the nominal systems. And that will lead to the fire. That'll set the that'll set the bundled tares ablaze. Those seven last messages of hard truth, those plagues. And it goes on in that verse 8, we probably get our best clue in that verse 8, 15, 8. And the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power, and no man, as no humans, were able to enter into the temple. No one could enter into a relationship with God. No one could properly worship God till those seven plagues of the seven messages were fulfilled. In other words, they had done their work of initiating, setting the bundled tares ablaze so that they would then burn and be destroyed as nominal Christians, and then be in an attitude to be humbled and to then enter into this new covenant relationship, which the testimony of God is for. It's the new covenant relationship, demonstrating his laws. So that would be, I think this is another way of saying it, but now let's open it for comments. For the comments or questions. Brother David?
Brother Rick, thank you. I was just thinking, with your comments about, the way farmers clear, once they're done with the harvest, in a lot of areas, they go ahead and, actually burn the fields, which, it gets rid of, the roots and everything else, so that they can, plant a new seed. Just that idea. So that would be, the next step of, like, the new covenant. Over. Thank you.
Yeah, that's very good, and that's true. I want to say, someone double checked me. Sorry, I don't have my fourth volume here. Ruth, you have it next to you. Could you look at a fourth volume, page 578, please, for me, and just let's double check something there, and then after that, I'll call on Sister Debbie's comment. Let's just see if I've got the right one there. Does it say winter at the top or something as a subheading?
Flee before the winter time.
Yeah, read that, please.
Pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day, because then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days be cut short, there should be no flesh saved, but through, by the elect, those days shall be cut short. Matthew 24:20-22. The gathering of the church occurs in what is called the harvest time at the close of a summertime of favor. Our Lord explained that in this harvest he would garner his wheat and burn the tares in a great time of trouble following. It is still the custom in country places to leave the burning off of refuse until the winter. We understand our Lord to mean then that we are to seek help and strength to escape from Babylon before the winter time of trouble comes upon her. We are to remember that there are to be two classes of wheat saved in this harvest. Contrary to nature, that would be one, the overcomers, the faithful and promptly obedient, who get out before winter and are accounted worthy to escape all those things that shall come to pass. Two, those loyal but not promptly obedient children of God, overcharged with zeal, not according to knowledge, and more or less contaminated with the spirit of the world. These will be helped out of Babylon when she is falling and will flee in the wintertime, saying in the words of the prophet, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, winter has come, and we are not saved. The Lord very graciously indicates that all the truly loyal of these shall ultimately come out of great tribulation and be before the throne, not in the throne with the little flock who inherit the kingdom as joint heirs with Christ, having washed their robes in the blood of the Lamb. Let us pray and labor accordingly that we be through our flight before the winter of trouble comes.
All right, thank you. So that was a point I thought dovetailed nicely with Brother David's comment about the farmers would get all their wheat or their crop safely in their barns before they would burn the bundled tares and the refuse left on the field. That would be the fire of anarchy. And that way you'd have a clean field for the next year's planting. And the next year's planting, in our case, is the new covenant blessings that are being offered to the Israel and then the world of mankind. But first you have to have that fire of trouble to prepare the world of mankind to receive these offerings from God. Thank you, Ruth. Before I call on Sister Debbie, was there any comment on what she read? Okay. Sister Debbie?
Okay, I'm trying to put this together in my mind. Let's hope I remember everything I was thinking before. In Revelation 11:19, it says that the sanctuary of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in the temple the ark of his testimony. Okay. And then when you go to where we are now, Revelation 15, in other words, people could see into the sanctuary or most holy. They could see the saints, you know, or the church complete. But then the sanctuary is filled with smoke and nobody could go in. Because I remember last week you mentioned that no man could enter into the sanctuary before, before the,
verse
the
eight.
Plagues, yeah, before the plagues were poured out. And I'm trying to understand that if is it first that they could see the church and then smoke entered in and nobody could see any more in there, or how would that play out? I'm just trying to work it out in my mind over.
Okay, good. Thank you. Well, that was a thought expressed last week that the people would see that the church was complete through the trouble, I think. That wasn't my thought. My thought was that the temple was open in heaven. That's just demonstrating that those of the little flock was realized that the church was complete, and those of the great company would recognize that the church was complete. They're in heaven. They would be the spirit begotten, not literal heaven, but the spirit begotten. And that's where we spent so much time talking about Elisha would have to know that Elijah was taken to receive the mantle. So that's what I think. Revelation 11:19. It's the spirit begotten recognize the church is complete, for it's in heaven. What we're seeing here that connects with that in our verses here is that the temple's filled with smoke. In other words, it's true. The world of mankind, no man can enter it. Humanity cannot enter into the new covenant relationship until after the work of the seven plagues has humbled them sufficiently and removed all the errors and lies. The hail has beaten down all the errors. Then they'll be in a condition to receive the blessings of that of what that Ark of the Testament would represent, the new covenant arrangement. Okay, couple of hands. Sister Debbie and then Brother Adi.
So what you're saying is that it's the same picture from two different perspectives.
Two different perspectives, but two different times, closely related. First, the spirit begotten understand where they are in the stream of time. The great company says, like Ruth read from Jeremiah 8, the summer is past and we're not saved. So the great company recognizes where they are. But the world of mankind won't recognize the real deal until after the fire of anarchy prepares it. So they got to go through that fire of anarchy for them to get the point. They have to receive the hail to beat down their pride and their errors. So that's a little further along. Okay. Hope that makes some sense. But of course, the Lord and the saints and even the holy angels will recognize where they are in the stream of God's plan first, and then the world will realize it a little later. Okay, Brother Adi.
So it says the temple was filled with smoke from the glory of God and from his power. What it doesn't say is his power is one of the attributes. The other attributes, love, wisdom, and justice, is in the background here. And I like the thought that they recognize that the smoke is from his power, and that his power attribute is taking the lead here. Not that the other ones are not active, but they're in a background more or less than his power. And so it's this attribute of his that I believe it becomes evident during this time, whereas his power has been sort of indirectly evident, and people don't recognize that God actually exists. Over.
No, Brother Adi, that's, keep your mic there. That's a very excellent point. Think that makes sense. In verse 7, one of the four living creatures gave unto the seven messengers these golden bowls full of the wrath of God. What would that living creature be? Possibly.
It could be justice or power, I would think.
Yes, I like that thought, that it's justice. And as you brought out in the following verse, his justice will then, justice is meted out, but then his power carries it out.
Mm-hmm.
Justice declares what to do, gives the message, go forth, but then his power is executed. That's possibilities.
Yeah, and so the world recognized that God is using his power at this point to bring about certain outcomes.
Yeah. And as we know, I think as everyone knows, the world recognizes it vaguely at first. You know, there's a lot in the world who are in fear of a coming Armageddon type, you know, that's true. So when it unfolds, in the fullness of God's wrath, many will think, you know, this is the end of the world. This is God's judgment. But in time, they'll understand it more clearly. But, okay. No, all good. Brother Chris.
That's what, I'm trying to express last week, that when it was seen, typically that word Edan means to discern, because we're talking about the plagues, but then in Revelation that word was optimi, which is it's discerned, but it's clear, but as Brother Adi brought out, it's not discerned directly. So what they're seeing is that they witnessed the church being martyred, and then you know, you would connect it with the earth has lost its saltiness. Suddenly these plagues are upon the earth, and everything is starting to go downhill fast. So they're seeing all of these things, and they know something has changed for the worse. It went from bad to really bad, because now the fires are breaking out everywhere. So they didn't see it in an understanding way, like the spirit begun, like the great company knows that the church is complete and gone. They clearly see it, but the earth is, they're noticing something serious has changed, and it's not going to be good. Over.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Chris. Very nice. We will, have to close here. We will come back to these verses next week and pick up. And if you would like me to repeat what I had said earlier about the other verses we're going to consider, I'll do that now. If you wanted to write them, you'll have them. So we're going to consider these verses. We'll start here next week in the 15th chapter. And then we'll look at 16, 1, and 17. 16, 1, and 17. And then we'll look at chapter 21, verse 3. Chapter 21, verse 3.